tonight, as a class, as the sheet says, a deeper look at the chuppah and wedding ceremony. If you didn't notice, but last 2 weeks we've had two Sheva Brachos, which is for the week following when a Jewish couple gets married for the first time. If they have a meal and there are ten people or more, they have the seven blessings. We know with the wine. You guys saw that we did that here last week and this week. So that is the culmination of the entire Jewish wedding process. What I'm going to do today, we're now starting a series on the life cycle. So we're going to do a deep dive in, as much as I can squeeze into, less than an hour, about everything about the Jewish wedding that you were do not know about. So I'm going to give a crash course. I'm going to start out with a snazzy little 5-minute overview video of a quick sort of a condensed thing. Then I have a video of an MGE-er who got married in Israel. She actually scheduled her wedding to happen during the fellowship trip. She was from a couple years before. She invited the entire fellowship class that was in Israel that year. It was very nice. It's Michal and Joe.
Oh, we met them.
And you also met them. They're big fans. So Ray Wiles, myself, and that could be part of it. So you'll see that. So we'll use that as being sort of like our going down to the deep dive into it. But this is sort of like a 5-minute like a overview. Okay, so let's go to the video tape.
Wait, can you not have Sheva Brachos if you're a before aside?
Yeah, one day.
There's a wonderful story on a really poor Jew.
I don't know the problem.
One day he had a dream. He dreamed that under a bridge, far, far, far away, there's a fortune. He dreamed, and basically he said, no, that doesn't matter. It's dreams, before we talk about dreams already, means nothing. Next day he dreamed the same dream. The day after he dreamed the same dream. He said, okay, if I dream the same dream 3 times, probably it's true. So he went. He went to this bridge. He started digging. Under the bridge was nothing. But then he saw a different person. And the person told them, what are you doing over here? He said, I don't know, I have this dream that under the bridge there I should find a fortune. So he told him, you believe dreams? I dreamed last night that I will meet a person that will dig under the bridge and he will look for a fortune. And I need to tell him that actually the fortune is in his own backyard, his own house. Looks like the story sneaks out of you guys. So many things happened. Basically, you grew up together. You were raised by a beautiful community. You were raised by your parents, by Mark and Karen, and the Lorraine Field, by your grandparents. You were raised by your grandparents. I'm not here today, but according to the Zohar, friends of Kabbalah, the souls are standing right over here together with you. You were raised by a Akiva Hebrew Day School. You were raised by an entire family, like Bnei Akiva, NCSY, Detroit community. And basically grew up together. Not only going to Israel, living your own dream, going to Israel, and finding in Israel your responsibility, your leadership, finding in Israel that you need to give and not only to take, finding in Israel your own identity, you found each other.
Describe marriage as follows. No union is more profound than marriage, where it embodies the highest ideals of love, fidelity, devotion, sacrifice, and family. In forming a marital union, two people become something greater than they once were. Our wish for you is that you together will have many wonderful days ahead, that you have the opportunity for many years to walk together, holding hands, experience the beauty of life together, watch sunsets, walking along the beach, and looking into each other's eyes, and appreciating the love that each of you has for the other.
I don't want to hear.
That was fun.
Yeah. That was a clearly a fun one. Okay, so let's
get down for a moment here.
Ashley and Jeff.
All right. So let's. Basically, now we're gonna. I want to share with you. This is a. Been learning with Rabbi Wilds the foundational parts of Jewish law. I'm going to make it very simple. You can put Jewish law into four buckets. This is the four-bucket approach to Jewish law. That's all you need to know. I think there's more to know, but this is make it very simple. Bucket number one is an obligation, a mitzvah that comes from the Torah. It's biblical. The Hebrew Aramaic is doraisa. It's from the Torah, min ha-Torah, a biblical commandment, such as, I got to keep Shabbat, I got to keep kosher. These are biblical laws. You can read them in the text of the Torah. When you read the Torah portion of the week, you will find these things mentioned sometimes once, like Shabbat, 10 times. Okay? It's a biblical obligation. Clear. Two. Second bucket. The rabbinic bucket. The rabbis were empowered to create legislation, to create law to either enhance or protect the Torah. For example, on Shabbat we read the Torah. Is the mitzvah of reading the Torah on Shabbat or on Monday or on Thursday or on a holiday from the Torah? No. It was part of one of the earliest pieces of legislation crafted by Moshe and his Sanhedrin, his great court of 71, that we should have, the Jews should never go 3 days without hearing public Torah. Shabbat, Monday, Thursday.
Is okay? It 71 or
70? 71. So it's Moshe and the 70.
The 70.
It's Moshe, he's the 71st. He's like, the, hey, okay. It's 70 and the 71. So 71 all in. You have to have an odd number because you can't have an even number. You have to have a tiebreaker.
But in the future generations, is it 70?
Always 71.
So who is the tiebreaker?
Well, Moshe is the head of the court.
No, but after he was gone.
So whoever's going to be the head of the court. That's a position. Okay. Yeshua, exactly. Excellent. Third category, custom. The word is minhag. Custom can come from a number of sources. Some can come from a community has a custom. Okay? For example, you're very familiar with Sephardim, people who are from, in general, not typically from Spain, but from the Middle East, they'll have certain customs. Their sidur will be slightly different. You notice that? That's a Sephardic custom. So it'll be communal. Sometimes families have specific customs. Sometimes the custom is actually articulated by the great court. So you can have customs of different levels, but it's a minhag. And the fourth category is stuff that Jews do but has no legal force. In other words, you call it just Jewish practice. It doesn't have any legal force. For example, you go to on Shabbos lunch, you'll notice what will be the typical cuisine of an Ashkenazic Jew. He might on Shabbos lunch have what food?
Cholent.
Kugel. Now, there is no obligation to have cholent. If you go the rest of your life, you're not anything like of a Jew if you don't have cholent. You might even be more healthy. But Jews, because in order part of the mitzvah is to enjoy Shabbos, the common practice was we need to have a food that we could sort of put it on, like we could slow cook it and it won't get burnt. Thus, cholent. And also, when Jews had no money, whatever you had, you put in the pot, you wrapped it up, you put it on the stove, whatever it was, and whatever it was is what they ate. You know, beans, barley, potatoes, onions. And if they had meat, you know, of some kind. All right, so there's four things. So if we're going to dissect, which we are going to do, dissect the wedding process, the wedding day and thing, you're going to have examples of biblical obligations, rabbinic obligations, lots of customs, and just stuff that Jews do, which have no legal force.
Like the Hora.
Yeah, you don't have to. You can dance. Well, we're going to get to that. Like walking down the aisle, is that a Jewish thing?
No.
But most Jews do it. Hasidim actually don't do it. They actually meet at the chuppah. If you've been to a hardcore Hasidic wedding, they don't walk down the aisle. They just meet at the chuppah, and they just do it, and that's it. They don't do the walking down thing. The walking down thing probably is not from a non-Jewish source. I don't know where it's actually from. Yes,
so
Scott.
The third category, the custom, that does have force.
That does have a halachic force. Certainly for the custom, for the community that has that. We're going to go through a lot of things here, okay? I'm just going to go through some bunch of things. I'm not going to read, you can read this, I'm not going to read you the English here. Some stuff I took from Aish, did a nice job, so I borrowed it here. Okay, let's start with the most basic obligation. Does a Jew have to get married?
No.
Yes. Yes. No. Yes. No.
A man has to get married.
Yes. It is a biblical obligation for a man, Jewish man, to get married. Biblical.
Why not a woman?
That's interesting. That's a good question. I'm gonna put that on the side. That's a good question. To be a little bit cynical. Because I would say the nature of a woman is wants to be married, by and large, and a guy, that's not such a simple thing. A.K.A. the West Side. Okay? So, it has to be a legal obligation. Next, what other biblical mitzvah is part of marriage?
Having children.
How much biblical children do you have to have? I mean, no, biblical children. How many children do you biblically, from the Torah, do you have to have?
One boy and one girl.
One boy, one girl is correct. They're called your replacements. They're replacing you. At one point, you're getting off the stage. They're it. Okay? And not only do you have to, here's a little tip. It's not one boy, one girl who themselves have children. In other words, they have to be fertile children. So you only know that if you have, that you fulfill the mitzvahs when you have grandkids. So you may want to get more than just two. You only have the 2.1 children. Yes, question.
I have a question about that, though. So, like, let's say that you get married, and let's say you have, like, four kids, and let's say they're all boys.
Right.
So what do you do?
Abigail, that was my life. I had first child boy, second child boy, third child boy, fourth child boy, and, like, what's going on over here? Fifth child boy. Number six was a girl. So that's the story. That's the story of my life.
Than
the end.
Okay, kept on rabbis with
right. Right. Whatever. But that, you got to try. It's a mitzvah. You got to try to accomplish this goal. 100%. You keep on going.
Wow.
Within reach. you do your best. I mean, there are other considerations. I mean, again,
like getting married at 40 and maybe you can't have 60.
I understand that. But do women have obligated biblically to have children? Mm-hmm. No, they're doing the guy a favor. Don't have to have a child.
But, Rabbi, you have an even number. You should have a seventh child.
Thank you. I'll bring that to my wife's attention.
Which brings us to our next one, right?
Child number seven. Okay. All right. So that's the basic thing. Now, let's fast forward. Last week you had Rabbi Feldman's techniques to find your Beshert, your beloved. He mentioned to me to you, there is a service called J Retro. Anybody heard of that? It takes a curated approach to online dating, which is, it's like Saw You at Sinai, but for people who are not fully Orthodox, which is basically you put up your profile, you get a matchmaker, and they check out other things, and they make suggestions, and then you can say yay or nay. So it's not just random, like, oh, I like the picture, swipe right, which, shall we say, is not so thoughtful, other than, he's hot and she's hot, but that's it. It's all you, what else you need? So, what?
Isn't that part of it, though?
As you all know, the rabbi wrote himself five things. I'm going to do it again. That's it. You need five things to get married. Number one, you need to be attracted to the other person. Number two, you have to enjoy being with that person most of the time. Number three, you have to be able to say affirmatively, this person could be a good husband or wife to my children, mother or father to my children. Number four, you must have to share the same core values. And number five, have good conflict resolution skills when life gets difficult, which it will happen. So that's the deal. That's a basic thing you need. All right, but I'm not talking about, we're now fast forwarding that you already have said person, okay? It is now the wedding day, okay? The wedding day, as was written down here, is like, on page one, it's like Yom Kippur. There's a custom among Ashkenazim to fast. There's a practical reason, because the you want to be, oftentimes many communities, weddings and drinking go together. So you want to make sure at least that the bride and groom are in full consciousness when they are underneath the chuppah, so they can effectuate the wedding, as we get to. Now, I'm going to take you step by step on the video here. Okay, this step is called. Okay. So the first thing is that basically what's called, the first thing called Kabbalah Kapanim is basically welcoming the guests. So you see there's a Kala. This is Michal, our Kala. Okay, MGU. She was in the fellowship. I think it's third fellowship. You guys are in the 11th fellowship. And she's welcoming her guests. And then on the guy side, they call the Chassan's table. Or in Yiddish, the Chassan's Tish. Tishman's table. I was once doing a wedding. The woman was not, shall I say, good in Yiddish. She says, Rabbi, where's the chassan's tush? I said, no, I'm sure you'll find it. So, it's tish, not tush. Don't make that mistake, okay? It's all right. Okay, what is he doing? What is this guy signing? 2012, everybody.
You're signing the ketubah.
All right, the ketubah. Okay, is it ketubah? Biblical bucket, rabbinic bucket, custom bucket, or things that Jews do?
Rabbinic.
Rabbinic is correct, because it's right there.
Not.
Okay, good. So, it's rabbinic. There, and basically, the who can tell me what the ketubah is in... half. It's either death or divorce lien on the guy's property, that if there is death or divorce, whatever comes first... The wife is assured a certain amount of cash.
Yes.
Okay, very romantic. You surely want that on your wall. People have no idea that they get a loom. You know, they get it. That's a lien. Okay, it's a legal. It's a document that basically ensures that that the woman does not end up getting nailed. If he dies or the relationship doesn't end. So therefore, it has a number that she's for certainly taken care of. Biblically, there are three obligations without a ketubah, even if there's no ketubah. What does the husband have to provide? It's always the husband has to provide for the wife.
Something of value.
Food. Clothing. Sex. The rabbis added what? Seven more. Those are articulated or alluded to in the ketubah. Okay? One of the seven more, healthcare.
Two men, non-relatives, by blood.
Okay, so the ketubah is signed by two kosher witnesses. There are witnesses that have to witness the ketubah signing. Kosher witness. The kosher witness means that they are observant Jews.
Okay.
Observant Shomer Shabbos Jews. Okay. There's a lot. Each one of these topics is really a mega topic. This is more. We're taking sort of a helicopter ride through, but we'll try to get to as many details as I can. So that's the ketubah. The ketubah basically it's a default payout. If in case of divorce, it basically means that the husband has to support. Basically, it means a year of support. So we'll translate the 200 pieces of silver translates to a year of support. In Israel, they keep that. They negotiate the deal. So I was at a wedding, and they announced 250,000 shkalim. You know, do the math. All right, so you know, exchange rate of 3.5 shekel per dollar.
So is that the get?
No. The get. Very good question. Excellent question. The get is that if unfortunately the couple want a divorce, he has to give the get. The get is really the reversal of what's happening on the chuppah. We're going to get to that. It's okay. An undoing of what's going to happen. Okay. Now, so okay. So here we're up to. So here's the sign that they're signing. Very nice. Now we're going to score. All right, so there we take, it's called the Bedeckin. Is this a biblical obligation or rabbinic obligation or custom? Or things that Jews do?
Custom.
Custom. If a couple didn't do that, it would still be a kosher. All right, then put the thing over.
There's Penny. There's Rabbi Penny.
All right. Okay, we have the chuppah, which was nearly blown away in this area. It was overlooking Jerusalem. It was gorgeous. The chuppah. All right, so biblical, rabbinic. Custom, what's the deal?
Rabbinic.
So it's interesting that it is an obligation, part of the, in order to be married under the custom, maybe a rabbinic, I have to double check, it might be a rabbinic obligation, or certainly a strong custom, okay, to marry underneath the Shulchan, which represents the home that he's bringing. Part of the second thing we should get to right now. Walk around the group seven times.
Custom.
Only Ashkenazi Jews do not do it. German Jews do not do it. Okay, whatever.
You should continue always to look at it.
Here we go.
Sal, Joey, I hate to ask you to look away from each other for just a moment. You should continue always to look at each other. Baruch atah Adonai.
Okay, here we go. Boom. Now we get to the essence of the wedding. The essence of the wedding is what they call kiddushin. Kiddushin. Betrothal. What's happening underneath the chuppah here? Rabbi Wiles is going to make two blessings. So making a blessing before the kiddushin, is that biblical, rabbinic, custom? What is it? Biblical? No, it's not biblical, because the only blessing, what is the only blessing from the Torah? There's only one blessing in the Torah. The text of, there is a, Birkat HaMazon is the only, is a biblical blessing, all mandated. Kiddush is also a biblical obligation. Okay, we'll leave it like that. So, but the blessings for the marriage is rabbinic. Why is Rabbi Wiles getting married? So why are you making the blessings?
It's a rabbi.
So what? What? The rabbi is... So what? Very practical reason. Basically, really, the person who should make the blessing is the bride and groom. But oftentimes the situation was that the people could not say the Hebrew.
So,
and many still can't. So therefore, the rabbi is saying it on behalf of the bride and groom. He's being motzi. He's like the chazan for them.
My wedding, can I do it?
No, the custom, because we don't want to make any distinction because between those who know and versus not.
There is people. A distinction. Like, I'm here at 9:50 at night, and I want to be able to own it.
All right, so the practice is, let me ask you a basic question. Do you have to have a rabbi? Let me ask you a more basic question. Do you need a rabbi to become married, halakhically?
No.
No, yes, no, yes, no.
Actually, no.
You don't need a single rabbi.
What?
Tell me you don't need a rabbi.
You do not need a rabbi. The custom of having a rabbi is functioning. What is the role of a rabbi at a wedding? That's very vague. What does that mean?
Make
sure everything's done. Because actually a wedding actually has lots of details to do it properly requires somebody who knows what's going on. So that's what the job of a rabbi is, make sure that all the details, specifically the ketubah, there are a lot of issues. At MG, you know, we've done a lot of MG weddings. It's a lot of stuff complicated that people are not sensitive to in order to do it. But really, all you need is two kosher witnesses, and you give something of value to a girl and says, with this quarter, you are betrothed to me in accordance with the law of betrothed to me, period. Two kosher witnesses see that. She accepts that, knowingly, which the guy said that. They're now done half the wedding. And there's no rabbi. Don't do that. Okay? Because you might need a get. You don't want to do that. Then you won't be able to marry Cohen. Okay, we're going to get to all these. Okay. You want to do that? Yes. Lauren.
I actually just learned this with my chavruta last night because she couldn't learn today. But okay. She just told me about the custom with the rabbi saying the prayers if you don't know the Hebrew. But she was saying that that's not the case in Sephardic weddings. Considered a custom then?
Yes. This is a custom. This is in the custom category. Yeah. All right, but the same way, by the way, it's an extension of, for example, when a person was called to the Torah, and it's still the case in Yemenite communities, what do you do when you got an aliyah of the Torah, if you got called up on Shabbat to the Torah? You read that portion. So around about 500 years ago, many people were not literate, so they could do the aliyah. So therefore, they have a Baal Kor, a guy who reads it, and he says it either word for word, and you say it along, or he's actually motzi you, he actually says it on your behalf. Okay? In Yemenite communities, you get an aliyah, you're reading it. Okay? You want to sort of look away. Don't call me. Okay? All right. So that's it. Now, I'm going to be very, this is very direct. What is, when he makes a brachas, let's go back to the beginning tape.
Eloheinu melech olam, borek b'ya gafen. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech olam, asher kiddushanu b'mitzvotav, v'tzivanu al ha'ariyot, v'asor lanu et harusot, v'hitir lanu et hanesuot lanu al yidei chupa v'kiddushin. Baruch atah Adonai, mechadesh amo Yisrael, al yidei chupa v'kiddushin.
Since it made a blessing on the wine, and then the blessing, because just like Kiddush, you make the blessing on the wine, and then you make the Kiddush, blessing on the wine, you make it a toast, make it upgrade the blessing.
I wanted to ask you, as you place the ring in just a moment on Michal's fingers.
She's ready.
She is ready.
It's done, buddy.
Why is it
not
her ring finger?
That's a good question. Okay, what are you going to say?
All right.
So what has he done essentially? In other words, the wedding experience has it's a tremendous joyous experience, but there's also a legal component going on here. He just did a transaction. When the guy gives a ring, he says you are consecrated to me. In what sense is Michal consecrated to Joey? What does that mean? It's a word, consecrated. What does that mean? What's actually happened here?
A union.
Okay. Yeah. What?
It sounds like you always heard. It sounds like she's property now.
Is he proper? No, can he buy and sell her?
Probably.
No.
They're
no.
Binded together.
No, that might be. So, Kedushin, he is acquiring exclusive rights of relationship with her. In other words, she can only be with him.
Can he be with
another woman?
Yeah.
Sure.
According to the Torah, a guy can have many wives that he can afford, provided he can provide her with all the stuff. The custom is, among Ashkenazim, we stop having polygamy in when? The year 1000. Sephardim, about 10 minutes ago. No, I'm serious though. When they did the airlift from Yemen, 1951, the guy would come down, wife one, wife two, wife three, wife four. The rule in Israel is that your polygamy is forbidden. Unless you were married to the multiple wives before you immigrate to Israel. They accept all the wives. It's it. Because people came from Iraq and Iran, the smarter guys, they didn't accept the what they call the Harem. There was a guy named Rabbeinu Gershom Ber HaGolah. He was a rabbi in the year around 1000, time of Rashi, and made a series of communal edicts that applied to all of Europe. They accepted as a with force of custom, one wife. And other takanot, other legislation that they accepted as a community. Didn't have a Sanhedrin anymore, but they made a communal acceptance. The Sephardic communities never accepted the prohibition on polygamy. Thus, in communities like Yemen and in Iraq and Iran, they had multiple wives. Halakhically, they had multiple wives. A woman cannot have multiple husbands. And why that is, you can think about why the reason would be. Okay, but I'm not getting into that whole, that's a whole conversation, which is juicy, but we're not getting into that.
Is electricity rabbinical law, prohibition from using electricity?
On Shabbat? That,
yeah.
It's rabbinic. Unless it's actually an incandescent light. That's really, how's it relate to, you're going for the buckets here.
We were talking about it before.
Okay, so it can sometimes be a biblical thing when you're, like an incandescent light, when it heats up the filament till it glows.
Right.
But a fluorescent is rabbinic at best. Okay, we're going to go on. Okay, so now we've accomplished step one of the two parts of the wedding. We have the Kedushin. She's now consecrated, betrothed. Michal to Joey. We're good. Okay. We break up. We're doing what? What are we going to do? Anybody want to do next?
Wait, you didn't answer the ring.
So why did you put the thing out of it? Why did she put the finger out like this? Anybody know?
To show she's accepting it.
To show that she clearly kept it and make it very clear for the two witnesses that are watching that she is, that he's putting on a ring to make a very discernible act. She can then afterwards take it and put it on her ring finger. But she makes it very demonstrative that she is firmly accepting it, A, and B, that the witness can witness it that that's happening, okay? They don't want to do that.
It's also the right hand versus the left hand.
I can't.
The right finger, making it very clear. It would be technically no different than if she took her hand like this and put the ring in. It doesn't have to be a ring. The ring is a min. Having a ring versus, let's say, you know, a piece of silver or gold or anything of value. That's a custom. It's a minhag. We do that. There's probably an awful Kabbalistic reason they do a ring. I'm not going to that. I don't really know.
But a guy doesn't wear a ring, right?
Doesn't have to.
Right.
Now 26 years. Very difficult part to show. Dude. Jesus.
Yeah, that's God's.
On the fifth day of the week, on the 28th day of the month of Av,
I just had read the Ketubah. Why am I reading the Ketubah now?
15th day of August 2012. The holy covenant of marriage was entered into in Jerusalem, Israel, between the bridegroom Joey Eckstein and the bride Michal Cohen. The bridegroom made the following declaration to his bride: "Be my wife according to the law of Moses and of Israel. I have faithfully promised that I will be a true husband unto you. I will honor and cherish you. I will protect and support you, and will provide all that is necessary for your sustenance in accordance with the usual custom of Jewish husbands."
I read in Hebrew first, and I read a little translation because I read it off. Okay.
As the rabbi, typically
to break up the Kedushin part and the Nisuin, the second part, the culmination of the marriage, we read the Ketubah, want to make sure that there's no mistakes, that if there's any mistake, we have to rewrite the Ketubah, which is a big hassle, you don't want that to happen, very bad. The rabbi will give a speech, he's doing it right now, and then we go into the, what's next, what's the last step?
Shemar.
Break the glass.
No, that's the last step, we have a step for that. What's next, guys? Well, Johnny, you should know. This happened like about 2 weeks ago, right? The seven blessings on marriage, which is that rabbinic? Is that, what's that?
Yes.
The rabbinic institution of saying seven blessings on the culmination of the marriage, okay? You must have these to be married, okay? Okay, here we go.
We say Samech. Okay.
calling the people for the seven brachos. Okay, so the seven blessings. One thing cool about doing anything in Israel, even though that her relatives were not were secular Jews, but of course, when you get the when the secular Jew gets a bracha, you can read it no problem, and they read it and they know what they're saying. In America, this is always like gives me tremendous anxiety because in MG weddings, their relatives like don't know dork. And so I send in transliteration, I get it like this, and I make it big, and it's still like...
The transliteration is always...
I know, whatever. I make an effort, it's just always bad.
So those people do not need to be kosher, they don't need to be...
They just have believe in God. You can't make a blessing and don't believe in God. That's a, you know, I can't praise something that I don't believe in. So, but as long as they believe in God, even if they're not Shomer Shabbos, they can make a Shabbos brachos. Typically what we'll do is we'll give the first three ones are like shorter, the easier ones to the close relatives, because as they get... You know, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, they get longer and longer. So you don't want to give a long bracha to somebody.
Only the witnesses with the ketubah have to be kosher.
Two get Adam for the four. There's three. There you need three sets of Adam. Well, typically even four. I didn't even talk about the Tanaim, which is a custom. We're gonna skip that for the time being. Two for the ketubah. Two for the witnessing the actual marriage when she stuck her finger away like that. And then two for when they go into the room of seclusion, yichud. We'll get to that very much shortly. Here we go. All right, so everybody said the Shev Brachos. They are now lawfully married.
Okay,
that, I don't know where they came from. I have no idea. That's just a queer.
It's own bucket.
Is it Rosh Hashanah? I don't know. Whatever.
Was it
Ilya?
Alright.
All right.
Why are you breaking the glass?
To remember
temple
the destruction
Jerusalem.
Of the temple.
Exactly. Well,
so it has nothing to do with
what
like
is that?
Good
just lived
luck.
Through it.
That's no, not Dev, no, nothing to do with the law.
There
is no. There is no. No.
Plus, like the only thing that should break is breaking to that small piece.
All right. This. They're going to be alone. How long did it?
12 minutes.
All right. This is where the Ashkenazim and Sfarim, there's a difference, but Ashkenazim have a tradition of we do in the Yichud Rim immediately, which is a culmination of the guy demonstrating by bringing his bride into, quote unquote, his house, and the door is locked, and the two witnesses outside. How long does it be alone for? 9 minutes, which is... The amount of times they could have sex.
Okay. Are they supposed to have sex?
No. Typically, since if they're fasting, they're pretty much having a snack. Okay?
So they're saying it's the shortest amount of time.
The shortest amount of time. 9 minutes.
9 minutes.
The Talmud argues that for at that point. Okay, we're not going to go into that. I got your... There's a debate about that, but let's say the 9 minutes is the lengthier time. No, it could be less than that. Whatever. I don't want to go into this.
Time to get dressed.
You guys will. I'll allow you guys to speculate on that. Okay, now. They're out. What are they doing now? What's going on now?
All right.
Okay. But where are they at right now?
They're at the
meal, the reception. It's sudat mitzvah. It's a mitzvah meal. Okay, it's a sudat mitzvah. Is that biblical?
Nope.
No, that's
forbidden.
It's ironically in the Torah you do have records of having wedding meals. So its tradition goes back way back, but it's a custom. You know, in other words, people would be married if they did not do it, but you should honor it by having it's a custom to have a big significant suda typically, ideally, you know, a meal of significance. That's why people have it. It's a fancy meal. Typically, meat, a choice, main, steak, fish, chicken, something like that. Now, that's now. What are they doing right now? They're dancing. Why are they dancing?
Supposed to celebrate with the bride and groom.
There is a. Is this a biblical obligation to rejoice the bride and groom? Yeah. Biblical. So interesting. So the structure here's follow me on this one. It's a little bit difficult, a little bit challenging. The structure to rejoice the bride and groom on their wedding day is a rabbinic obligation. But when you do that, you fulfill the biblical obligation of extending chesed and the mitzvah of love your fellow Jew as yourself. Just as you'd want to be rejoiced by your family and friends on your wedding day, you do it to your fellow Jew. Okay? So in non-Jewish weddings, the bride and groom function sort of as the grand host and hostess. They want to make sure everybody's happy. No. In Judaism, our obligation is to make sure they're happy. Okay? And that's why you saw in the first video where that was a heck of a party.
Yeah.
They had costumes going on there. They had a massive band. They're real, and I think that bride was definitely one happy bride.
Yeah.
and also of course Michal's wife. On a chair and them dancing together and feeling they're going to die.
What's the practice of
something that Jews do, but it would be an expression of giving them joy. Everybody likes that. Nobody likes, you know, but it is that completely something that Jews do.
I always just thought that was something people did. And like when I went to, like when I was younger and I went to like my first non-Jewish, you know, wedding, and I was like, I was so sad. I was like, how could they not do this? This is the best part of a wedding. This is why they get married.
Okay. Put it around my mom on your shoulder. What is that?
זה כיף.
I couldn't dream of a better family. I'm very, very lucky guy. I need a dumb moon. What's that?
Alright, if you didn't feel the good mood before, you didn't feel good now. Alright. Okay, so that's... Then after the end of the wedding, they do Shev Brachas, they do the benching, the Birkat Hamazon, they do the seven blessings again after they did, which they did in the Chuppah. They, people guests do that, they... and that basically is the wedding. Any questions? Yes?
A quick question about the Seudah. It says rabbinic custom on the sheet, so is
that... I'm not sure, I have to double check that.
Bucket two, bucket three,
It's a strong minhag. I'm not sure if it was instituted by the rabbis. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Question, Scott.
Okay, so I understand, pardon me, wrong, the concept of the mitzvah when we're praying is that we don't get distracted. That's
yeah.
like the general concept.
Yes. Good question.
Why do you see mitzvahs at weddings when it's not about distraction? You know, it's not,
so is that biblical, rabbinic, custom, or stuff that some Jews do? It's there is no obligation. In fact, the great halachic decider, Moshe Feinstein, who passed away in 1986, was the de facto, the de facto. All right, we got bar mitzvah stuff going on. He did not have a mechitza on his dance floor.
Moshe Feinstein. Did not have a mechitza.
His, but for his children. His grandchildren did. So the custom, in other words, there's an obligation to have a separation of the sexes during prayer. That's an obligation. The question is, as an act of sniyut, of modesty, so if there's like, you know, people dancing the very, like, you know, Sephardic dancing, and, they, you know, they had some in that one they had separation. But it's a custom. It's stuff that Jews do. But you know what I mean. But there is—it's not—it's not ridiculous. I mean, it depends on the situation. You know what I mean. Most MG weddings, so now we get to mixed dancing. So mixed dancing, you're not allowed to touch anybody but your wife or your blood relative. So, but an MG typically would have de facto the family is not observant. So we'll have typically a separate dance set, which would be like the first dance set, the Hora set, the Jewish tunes, and then the bride and groom will do the first dance and dance with then they'll do the classic American kind of stuff. So that's the basic deal. But it's their wedding too, and it's their party too. So if they want to do that, that's what they want to do. So that's it. But that technically. No mechitzah is required.
It's more like the cover, like put a fence around.
It's a communal practice. It's a communal practice. It's a communal minhag.
It needs to allow me to recite a kedusha.
What?
You can't have a very recite a kedusha. You have that the same idea. Or else
so when what makes MG so interesting, I have sort of a collision of interesting communities that don't get together. Often. I'll give you one, on the OT rate. 30 seconds. I had an MG, a woman who was a fellow, her family were atheists. They weren't just not religious. Wow. They were firm atheists. She was marrying a guy who was not so observant, but his family was Hasidim.
What?
This was the wedding I had to do. So it was, hello, showtime. So they had a mechitza around their table. They had the Hasidim had their table. It was separate men and women, and they were separated with a mechitza around their table. Forget about the dancing, even their eating. Okay, and then I had the atheists from Dix Hills. So that's an MG wedding. Love it. Okay, so all right, guys, have a good night.
Thank you. That's actually.